The second round is in full swing and the action increases from game to game. This is where the contenders are separated from the pretenders. To give you some skin in the game, DraftKings will be offering free-to-play pools every day of the basketball playoffs, offering players a free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes. That's up to $10,000 in total prizes up for grabs each day. The best part is that it's free to play. DraftKings free-to-play pools are easy to enter. Just download the DraftKings app, go to pools, and choose from a wide variety of free contests for an opportunity to win cash prizes. All you have to do is answer a handful of questions around what you think is going to happen during that day's basketball games and track your results throughout the evening. Questions will range from which team will hit the most threes to which team will score first. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings app now and use promo code TBPN when you sign up to get your free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes every day of the basketball playoffs. Head to DraftKings Pools page to get your shot at huge cash prizes. That's promo code TBPN for a limited time only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for full details.
What's up, everybody? It's Miles Turner, the Indiana Pacers. You're listening to the Pace Rules Podcast. Be sure to follow at Pace Rules on Twitter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pace Rules Podcast, the only Australian NBA podcast with a bias toward the Indiana Pacers, coming to you with a bit of an emergency pod. We did not expect this news to come this offseason really at all. We thought that the opportunity to make a move on a coach had passed already, but lo and behold, I woke up this morning at about 6:30 a.m. Australian time to a tweet from Woj, of course, who breaks all the Pacers news these days. But the Pacers have fired coach Nate Bjorkgren after one season, finishing 34-38, ninth in the Eastern Conference. A lot of criticism leveled at Nate Bjorkgren over the course of the season. A lot of articles came out about the way that he treated players and staff, about the way that he was in front of the camera versus behind closed doors, the frustrations of the team, the frustrations of Kevin Pritchard. And it all came to a head today with him being let go after one season coaching at the top level of NBA basketball. It's a bit of a sad situation. Alex, it's just you and I today. Justin's off mourning Nate Bjorkgren's coaching career, but it was a bit of a shock.
Well, Justin might be on a flight to Indiana as we speak to interview for the coaching job. True. The way things are going. So, but yeah, the news was definitely shocking. Like, maybe not to everyone, but to me, I think it was just the timing. Like, we all assumed that if he was going to get fired, it was going to be sooner, like closer to when we lost to the Wizards, right? But I think for it to happen now, it tells you that KP saw guys like Stotts, or Steve Clifford become available. Yep, those two guys. I think he definitely had his eye on a few people. And once those guys became available, I think the decision became really easy for him. And look, man, it's embarrassing. Like, we talk a lot about teams being a little bit dysfunctional, front offices like the Wizards, the Kings. Like, we can make fun of them. But, hey, man, the Pacers are in a spot of embarrassment right now because, you know, you just fired a coach last season, and now 74 games after hiring a new one, you have to hire a third coach. So, yeah, it's a bad look for KP. But I will say, to his credit, he took responsibility. You know, last offseason, it was Simon's decision, right? I think more so to let Nate go. But this time, KP said it was all on him. Like, he made this hiring. He interviewed about 18 coaches. But he made the wrong decision, and he took onus on that, and it's a massive one for him. He can't get this decision wrong.
Yeah, it was really intriguing to hear Kevin Pritchard's press conference today. Obviously, you and I have had the privilege of interviewing KP earlier in the year, and he spoke very candidly about how it was a tough decision for him, how Nate Bjorkgren took it. You know, he was as hard on himself as any coach you'd ever heard. And Bjorkgren certainly strikes me as the type of guy that would be hardest on himself versus everyone else, which is, I guess, a positive trait. But he'll learn, obviously, a great deal from this, just as every coach does from their first head coaching NBA opportunity. And unfortunately, this went a whole lot shorter than anyone expected it to when the hire was made. KP was really strong on the need to get an established coach in for this team, and we'll talk about who that could be in a moment. You've already thrown up a couple of names, and I very much agree with you that it seems like they were waiting for one shoe to drop so that they could pounce on a available candidate. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that Bjorkgren lost this role because he didn't deliver mostly on defense. I mean, the offense became supercharged. There are a lot of threes, there are a lot of high point totals, but you know, we were scoring 130, but giving up 140. I mean, we laughed across the end of the season about the points totals that the team was giving up without Miles on that team, with Domas as the sole big man on the team. And, you know, the defensive effort just didn't look like it was there. I think the word that was bandied around today on Twitter was schizophrenic defense, because of all the different defensive schemes that that Bjorkgren introduced. I mean, it sounds like he sort of he outcoached himself to an extent.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And that's what KP was talking about a lot in the presser. He stressed balance, right? When he's watching the playoffs now, you know, teams are putting up big numbers, but they're also being able to get stops. You watch the Suns team today. Yeah, they scored a lot, but they were also slowing the Nuggets down, right? So they made life hard for everyone but Jokic. And that's what you need. You need that balance. Nate didn't have it. Our defensive schemes, to put it nicely, were just god-awful. Like, they were bad. 140 points a game to the Wizards? That tells you all you need to know, right? It was bad. So I will say, though, that the first name we threw out there was Terry Stotts. And I hope people out there, you know, he obviously has that Indy connection, but I hope people understand that he's not going to turn this defense around. The Blazers were worse than the Pacers, or just about the same as the Pacers defensively. So if KP is going to make that, you know, that decision to go with him, you have to get in a defensive-minded guy, much like the guy we lost in Dan Burke, right?
Absolutely. And I think KP admitted as much in the press conference today, where he effectively said that losing Dan Burke was the biggest mistake they made. He reinforced a couple of points. Firstly, the Pacers are not going to hire a first-time coach again. They're not going to hire a young coach. They're going to hire an old, established, respected coach in NBA circles, a coach that the players are going to immediately respect, that has the runs on the board, that already has a good reputation around the league, has good reputations with star players. Terry Stotts obviously has all of those qualities. So I think it would be remiss of us not to mention his name repeatedly, because it certainly sounds like this is what the Pacers are going to do. The Pacers love Indiana natives. They love people that are from Indiana. They love people that have played for Indiana colleges. They love people who were raised in that environment, people that, you know, hold those Midwest values. And it certainly seems like Terry Stotts, from all indication, is an incredible citizen, a really good person, very well liked. The Blazers organization spoke extremely positively about the contribution that that Terry and his wife had on that Portland community, and the amount of charity work they'd done. And I mean, with all of that, plus the fact that he was able to make the playoffs year on year on year with this Portland team, this seems like a very Pacers move. This seems like very on brand for the Pacers to hire what is, after going out on a limb and hiring a new coach, this is the safe option, is it not?
100%. And speaking about Indiana natives, I want to bring up a guy who I wish was available in Brad Stevens. Obviously, it's super sad that obviously happy for him, because it seems like he didn't want to coach anymore. But man, what a hire that would have been. I mean, to get him would have been just amazing. But yeah, like everything you said about Terry Stotts hits. I mean, as we said, Indiana guy. Had success in the regular season with Portland, has struggled a little bit in the playoffs, did make the conference finals a few years ago. But, you know, again, I think that, don't get me wrong, the head coach is incredibly important, as KP said, but I actually think the biggest thing that they're going to have to worry about is the assistants.
Yeah.
Can you bring in a defensive guru? Because if Dan Burke doesn't want to come here, which, why would he really if they let him go?
He'll stay in Philly, of course.
Exactly. But so who are you going to bring in? That's my biggest concern. You know, I've seen people say Clifford as an assistant. I don't really think he would want to become an assistant. Maybe I'm wrong. So yeah, that's the biggest question mark for me going into the offseason.
I think one of the things that Pritchard emphasized on the press conference today was the need to have a whole bench full of talented coaches that could bring different things to the table, an offensive-minded coach, a defensive-minded coach, a development coach, someone that can, you know, vibe with the personalities on the team, some way, you know, the different qualities that this team had. And it's funny, I mean, even though Nate McMillan was nicknamed Sarge, even though he had, I guess, quite a strict approach to coaching, the bench was very, very well liked. The whole coaching staff. I mean, Bill Baino was extremely well liked. He's holidaying with Miles Turner right now. I saw a post on Instagram the other day of Bill Baino and Miles Turner holidaying in, I think, the Caribbean somewhere or somewhere that looks really cool on a boat. But I mean, there's an example of this guy was an assistant coach and was clearly well liked. Dan Burke was clearly well liked. Popeye Jones, clearly well liked. So, I mean, you know, even though they didn't have the success on the court, they had chemistry. And that chemistry goes all the way back to when they lifted Corey Joseph up all four other players on the floor a couple of years ago when Corey Joseph went careering out of bounds, chasing a loose ball. I mean, that's the sort of chemistry that you want on a basketball team. And it starts from the leaders on that team. So I agree. I think they need three really strong assistant coaches, potentially one of them being a young mind, someone that they can develop into a successor for Terry Stotts, who's 64 years old, I think. So doesn't have a great deal of time left potentially as a top level NBA coach, maybe 6 years, maybe 7 years. He may coach into his 70s, who knows? But I mean, I think the Pacers have shown that they can actually develop talent. So why not try and develop talent on the bench? So I think the key for me would be Terry Stotts would be a great decision in my view, very well respected. A couple of senior assistant coaches that have been around the block for a while, and then a more junior assistant coach that you can build up and that you can have as a successor on that bench. I think that's the key mix for me.
That's kind of like the San Antonio, what they go with a little bit. We know how many coaches have spawned off of Greg Popovich. I mean, you can name half a dozen already. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. But it also goes back to the locker room, right? And yeah, that's another thing that I'll touch on with KP is that he talked about Al Jefferson. You know, you brought up that 17-18 team a little bit. So, Al Jefferson barely played, right? I mean, he barely touched the court, but he was such a big presence in the locker room, helping with not only Miles and Domas in the front court, but just bringing everyone together, right? So the Pacers clearly didn't have that this past season. We've talked a lot about who the leader is, and that's something that another guy is Udonis Haslem that he mentioned in Miami. Yeah. We saw him going absolutely mental, throwing the chair, trying to rally that team. You ask any Heat player, I'm sure they'll all talk about how important he is, even though he doesn't play. So we need that locker room presence, don't we?
I was really surprised at how candid KP was today about the fact that he didn't see a genuine leader on this roster right now. And that's something that that we've referenced across the end part of this year, in that, you know, we've had players show flashes of leadership. We've had TJ McConnell be probably the leader on the floor a lot of the time, lifting a lot of the young guys up and motivating everyone around. You've seen Miles Turner sort of do the media and go into bat for his teammates and be that positive, you know, face of the franchise outward in the media. You've seen Malcolm Brogdon be a little bit more reserved, but be a stoic, respected guy with a lot of cachet in the locker room. Best player, Domas Sabonis, kind of not saying a lot, not a big talker, not a big, you know, tell me. He's more of a show me. He goes out there and he, you know, shows you what he does well. But I was talking to a friend about this the other day. I mean, it's clear that those players weren't necessarily challenged for their faults. One of the things that came out today was that Bjorkren seemed to either be afraid to or unwilling to challenge his best players. And Domas and Malcolm were listed as two of those players. We spoke during the year about Domas complaining about foul calls, about not getting back on defense, about, you know, jawjacking with the referees. That's an example. I mean, we spoke about the need for Nate to sort of take tech fouls to kind of set an example, but at the same time, you also need to have a word to your star player to say, you set the tone. You're our two-time All-Star. It's important for Domas to step up as a leader if he wants to be that franchise player, is it not?
Yeah, and it's about holding everyone accountable, you know, not just the Goga Batazes of the roster with Greg Foster, but, you know, I think that is why Greg Foster did that, by the way. I think he knew that first of all, you know, that coaching tenure had probably come to an end, but he was, everything had boiled over, right? No one was holding people accountable, especially on the defensive end, as you touched on a little bit there. So, you know, obviously that's not a good look on the court. You want to keep that stuff behind closed doors, but that's the type of things you need. And with Nate McMillan, I think they had more of that. As you said, a sergeant type figure almost, holding people accountable. And I think that's such a big part of basketball. You can't just let these guys run around willy-nilly doing whatever they want and you know, not being held to the same standards as the 15th or 14th guy on the bench. Everyone needs to be held to the same standard.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting to hear KP reference Haslam, as you say, and Al Jefferson and the need to get a leader. I mean, it seemed to me that as far as he was concerned, there was no leader on this team right now, either on the bench as a coach or on the floor as a player, or on the bench as a player at the end of the bench, like Al Jefferson was. So I think look for the Pacers to make a splash in free agency, not for a big sort of free agent all-star name, because they don't have the salary, they don't have the assets to be able to potentially grab that guy straight away, but for a veteran guy, for a guy that's going to set the tone in practice. Don't be surprised if you see the Pacers sign a veteran and it comes out that this guy is the first one to arrive and the last one to leave, or that they've been challenging the team in practices, or that, you know, they are well respected by their teammates around the league. We've had those guys before. As you said, Al Jefferson was one. I think, you know, Damian Wilkins, who we've interviewed, was another guy who didn't play a whole hell of a lot, but was incredibly respected by his teammates and now works for the NBA PA. So I think the move will be that even if we re-sign everyone, bring everyone back and don't make wholesale changes to this roster, and we'll come to that question in a minute, with Miles Turner and the rumors that surround. But I think the key for me is that the locker room leader, even if it's a bench player, even if it's a minimum guy, they need to get that stoic, strong, accountable personality, don't they?
I even remember people talking about Danny Granger, like when he wasn't playing, he was injured on the bench, but you asked Paul George about him, he was his mentor, right? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be a guy that goes out there and plays 30 minutes a night, like Brogdon, like Domas. It can be anyone. So, you know, again, as you said, it could just be an under-the-radar signing that people scoff at. But if you're a fan of basketball and you see us signing a vet guy like that, don't be surprised, and you should be happy with that, because it means that KP's taking it seriously and this locker room needs improving clearly, and that's a big part of it.
Speaking of the locker room needing improvement, it's trade rumor season, as it always is around this time of year in the NBA. J. Michael's been a guy that we've, you know, followed with great interest over the last probably few years. Tends to tweet pretty accurate information about what's going on in the team. And one of the things that he emphasized was that Miles Turner's getting some interest from, in particular, he cited Charlotte and Minnesota as two teams that have showed significant interest in Miles. We've spoken about, you know, the idea of breaking up Miles and Domas, and we've spoken about that the potential for a trade with Gordon Hayward, and KP said as much, that, you know, Miles was potentially going to be involved in a deal before it fell through and Danny Age asked for the world. But at the moment, we have a situation, I guess, where Miles is a coveted player around the league. So I'm interested in your thoughts as to trying to get someone in from one of those teams. I mean, you look at Minnesota, the guy that would be available would be Beasley. With the greatest respect to him, he's serving some jail time right now. I'm not sure whether he fits the Indiana culture, or whether they would want to associate themselves with someone with that current checkered past. Be it, whether he, you know, is rehabilitated and ends up being a model citizen or not, at the same time, I can't see that being a move that Indiana would make. Minnesota has the opportunity to keep their pick in the top four. If the Pacers jump up in the draft order a little, is there the ability to package Miles and a pick to move up in the draft? Well, maybe that's another option. But KP also said today that they were probably not going to do a rebuild. They probably weren't going to make a high draft pick and wait 3 years, that they thought they had the talent now, which is, you know, one of the doors that we thought they might take. So what's your view on, I guess, Miles' availability and what the team would ask for in return?
Well, yeah, we kind of talked about it a little bit in our last episode that I think Miles's value has never been higher, right? Like, you know, when he was healthy, he was a top three DPOY candidate. Obviously, you know, he's a big that can stretch the floor, which is a unique-ish ability. So I think his value is really high. We've talked a lot about the Hornets, but yeah, the Timberwolves were a new team to come up. I think the Timberwolves are going to be really desperate this offseason. They've failed for a long time. And, you know, we see Devin Booker getting help from the Suns front office. They're in the playoffs. If you're Karl Anthony Towns, you're watching that going, man, like, I want to be there. I want to be in the playoffs. I'm sick of being a 14th, 15th seed, being in the lottery. So, yeah, I think there's going to be some desperation there. I don't know how I feel about that pairing, by the way, Kat and Turner. I mean, he makes up for Karl Anthony Towns' lack of defense, but I'm just like against two centers now, I guess, as a Pacers fan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I just don't know how you trade Miles to a team that already has an established big man because we've seen that that doesn't necessarily work out all that well. Now, Karl Anthony Towns is an incredible player and he is a better player than Domas Sabonis. Absolutely. Right now. But at the same time, you still create the same problem. What do you do when you come up against a team that plays LeBron James at power forward? What do you do with Kawhi Leonard at power forward? You know, those are the sorts of issues that are raised. I mean, Charlotte's obviously a more appropriate modern fit for Miles, along with LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward and Miles Bridges. You know, and PJ Washington seems like the logical return piece. But at the same time, we just haven't seen Domas provide that defensive effort as a rim protector as yet. But there's a lot of unknowns because what happens when Domas has an off season with a Terry Stotts or a Steve Clifford and a number of other players? I mean, you saw what Nikola Vucevic did under Steve Clifford the last couple of years. He was an incredible player. He, you know, unfortunately, that Orlando team didn't do a lot. But if you want to talk about Steve Clifford's ability to unlock a big rebounding guy that can score a lot of points and make a few passes and hit a couple of threes, like, he has a track record of getting the best out of a guy like that. So for me, I mean, there's every chance that we go with Domas at center next year, and that probably looks like it would be the preferred option for the team. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. I think if you're going to trade Miles, you know, you touched a little bit about the draft pick. I think that they will only trade him for an established starter. Like, that seems to be the mold that the Pacers go for. They very rarely trade up for an unproven guy. So, you know, if we are going to trade Miles, I keep saying, you know, as you said there, PJ Washington is a name that I keep coming back to, makes a lot of sense. He's that stretch four type, right? So if the Pacers are going to trade Miles, I think it's going to be for a stretch four who can guard the perimeter and give Domas a little bit of a rest on that end. Or even, this is a bit of a stretch, but a playmaking point guard, right? Which we've talked about a lot. That way you can play, I guess, small ball with a TJ at the four, which they liked in the bubble. So yeah, the Pacers have options, and I think that's the bonus there.
It is. Look, I do wonder. I mean, I know we can't trade that draft pick because we can't trade in multiple seasons until that draft pick, I think, is signed and been on the roster for at least 30 days. But is there, you know, I guess, an appetite to go all in again? And, you know, even though we're drafting potentially 13th or highly likely to be 13th, is there the potential to package Miles with that 13th pick and, you know, get a more impactful guy? Like a playmaking point guard, or like a stretch four. I do also wonder about the big man rotation. I would really like to see the Pacers sign a physical big man off the bench. I think we've been lacking that the last couple of years because we've been emphasizing Goga's development, but Goga hasn't really hit the park a lot. He's been injured for a lot of the last two seasons, and we've been playing two centers. So if we're going to trade Turner, okay, you know, that seems like it's probably the move that they'll make. And unfortunate for us, because we need a new intro and we love Miles Turner and we want him to stay a Pacer forever. But if that's going to be the case and we have to accept it, then I think we need our Jefferson Mark II. We need that big physical guy to come in, get rebounds. You know, we'll talk about KP's rhetoric in a moment, but that lunch pail guy, the guy that's going to go to work for 5 minutes a quarter, the guy that's going to, you know, play 5 minutes and get three rebounds and maybe a block shot and maybe a couple of baskets or one or two baskets. So we need those couple of guys on the team or that one guy off the bench. And that might be to Goga's detriment, but I do think it's what we're missing a little bit. Goga did show a few signs, though, toward the end of the season, didn't he, that he could potentially be that guy.
Yeah, he definitely did look better outside of the injuries, obviously. And just talking about the bigs off the bench, I mean, you look at the 76ers, Dwight Howard, you know, he comes in, he's a little bit of an instigator. He's tough. He's going to rebound, block shots. That's the type of player that you want if you're the Pacers coming off the bench.
Yeah.
As you said, even if it does cost Goga some minutes here or there, I think that's worth it, right? Like, if you can go out and get that guy, I still think that that's a move that you really want to make if you're the Pacers.
Unless Goga, you know, shows, I guess, a much, much improved, I guess, skill set over summer, unless he shows a much more improved physicality over summer. If he can improve that physicality, if he can improve his ability to be able to get in position to get more rebounds, block shots, be more confident with the basketball in his hands, be more confident when guarding his opposition, then I think, you know, you don't need that guy. But if not, then I think we need to invest in another big man, particularly if we trade Miles or Domas. I want to talk about the two words that this podcast probably just dislikes more than any other two words that we've ever heard Kevin Pritchard say: tough out. So Kevin Pritchard used the term tough out today in an endearing sense, describing what the Pacers want to be. Look, we can't beat around the bush here, Alex. We hate this. We really don't like it when this language is used, because, and this may not be Kevin Pritchard's, the point of what he was trying to say, but may not be his intention. But what we hear is we're happy with mediocrity. We're happy to be beaten in a 7-game series. We're happy to get to the second round of the playoffs. We're happy to, you know, get swept in the second round, but win a first round series. We're happy to just make the playoffs. We're going to be a tough out. We want the other team to come on the floor and go, wow, it's going to be a tough game tonight. We still should win, but it's a tough game. That's what I hear personally. What about you?
Yeah, exactly the same. I know Justin's not here. He's probably, I can imagine his reaction when he heard that. If you guys have been listening to the podcast for a long time, Justin hates that more than anyone I know. So, but he's right. You know, though, no one wants to hear a tough out. Like, those are obviously, again, we love KP and he's made some great moves. We're not here just to absolutely shit on him or anything, but look, those are words you don't want to hear, right? Like, you've spent a lot of money on this starting lineup. You don't want to be a tough out. You don't want to be a first round exit. We're sick of it. We haven't won a playoff series since 2014.
Yeah.
That's too long, man. Like, 7 years is too long for this franchise not to win a series at least. So, yeah, I was really disappointed that he said that. Whoever's, you know, KP, like, somebody needs to tap him on the shoulder and just go, Kevin, we love what you're doing, mate, but stop saying that. Like, please, the fans absolutely hate it. Stop saying those two words.
Yeah, I mean, look, the whole lunch pail thing, I guess I'm not an American, so I, you know, I don't really understand the whole lunch pail comment. It's maybe a part of the vernacular that I haven't quite got yet. I understand that it means working hard. I understand it means, you know, giving your best and going to work, doing the dirty work. And KP also discussed winning dirty or winning ugly today, and the need to win ugly. Now, the winning ugly of, you know, the Malice at the Palace era was like a 78-73 victory over the Pistons. Like, that's the winning ugly that we're used to. But the fact of the matter is that teams don't score that many points anymore. They score 110, 112 points a game on average. So be that as it may, the winning ugly can't be at the expense of the offense. We have to, like, the whole point is to score more points than the other team. And it doesn't matter how ugly you want to win, the other team's going to score 100 to 110 points per game. So we need to be able to score more than that. So I get the whole lunch pail thing. I get the whole winning ugly thing. But the days of the 99-97 game are gone. The days of the 89-87 game are gone, aren't they? They're like the days of the 112-110 game are here.
Well, I think that's what the Knicks struggled with in the playoffs, right? Like, they were one of the best defensive teams in the regular season. You know, credit to Tibbs, he won Coach of the Year because they were so good on that end. But when it came playoff time, they couldn't match the Hawks offensively. So, you know, it's about finding that balance. Obviously, you know, you're not going to hold teams to 90 or 100, as you said, but you also can't be giving up 150 in regulations to the Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook Wizards. So, you got to find the balance, don't you?
Well, I get it. I mean, there is a time where, to use a piece of Australian vernacular, when the game gets really tough, when you're in, like, I always go back, game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals, Golden State and Cleveland. You could see, I think there was one basket scored in the last about 4 minutes of that game. It was Kyrie's three. To use the Australian term, the sphincters tightened during that last 5 minutes. No one could hit anything. Everyone was stressed. Everyone was playing good D. Everyone was playing desperate. That is where defense wins championships come from. I get that expression because it is, you know, it's true when you look at the last 5 minutes of that game. Having said that, to be able to get there, defense is important, but offense and scoring and having go-to scorers that can get you a basket and keeping the game close to give your scorers the opportunity to get you a basket and making runs that put the opponent away, like the Spurs did to the Heat in 2014, for example, that's also how championships are won. I mean, the only time defense needs to win you a championship is when you keep their game close. Usually if you blow the other team out of the water, like the Spurs did to the Heat that year, where Patty Mills hit a bunch of threes. That's how I remember it, Australian connection. But that wins championships too. And it's all well and good to say tough out, lunch pail, et cetera, but let's hit some shots, guys. Let's blow other teams out of off the court. We have talented offensive players. TJ Warren can get buckets. Caris LeVert can get buckets. Malcolm Brogdon can score if he's got the ball in his hands. Domas Sabonis is one of the most talented offensive players in the league. You know, Jeremy Lamb can hit shots. Doug McDermott can hit shots. So if you go with this roster again, you have to give them the freedom to shoot. You have to give them the freedom to be able to blow other teams off the court offensively, whilst also putting in defensive effort. And we didn't see that this year. We saw one side, we saw us score a lot of points, but we didn't see that defensive effort. And I get that that needs to come in, but it shouldn't come at the expense of offense, should it?
Right. No, you're right. And that is one thing that I'll give Nate credit for. We were like top five in pace after the All-Star break. So,
yep.
You know, we were pushing the ball, shooting it. But yeah, you're right. Again, got to find the balance. And that's the biggest thing for the Pacers this offseason.
It is. So it's been a really eventful week. I'm interested to see when and if we hire a coach prior to the playoffs ending. What's your prediction? Do we hire a coach before the champion is decided, or do we wait until that period between when the champion is decided and the draft, that 1 or 2 week period, to announce our coach?
And it's tough because I want to say, you know, I think he regretted doing such a long search last season. So
yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say he actually makes the hiring before the finals. I think he does it really soon.
I think so too. I think it's going to be 1 to 2 weeks of a few interviews with key senior candidates like Stotts and Clifford. I think they will be two of the finalists in this search. And we'll know before the NBA finals, I'll say, who our coach is going to be. We'll get to meet them and hopefully we'll get to interview them one day. Or hopefully we'll get to interview a drafted Josh Giddey. We've got plenty of Pacers to come to you over the offseason. We've got plenty of draft to talk through. We've got, obviously, now head coaching candidates to talk through as well. So we will come to you every week of the offseason. This has been the Pacers Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, DraftKings promo code TBPN.